Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Dr. Kirsten Wise, Extension Specialist in Plant Pathology with the University of Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hello, Jay.
Good morning.
How's everybody doing today?
Getting along.
Pretty fair weather for right now for this time of the year.
It's been beautiful weather, actually. I don't think there's been many complaints on the weather, and combines are in the field, semis are running up and down the road, and so harvest is quickly becoming in full swing. It's slow to start, but once it starts, about a couple of weeks, and you got everybody running.
I may be the only person complaining about these mild temperatures right now. I've spent the last week in Idaho where my highs were in the low 60s. And lows were in the 30s, and that suits me just about right. Mm-hmm. Come back to these 70-degree temperatures and 80-degree temperatures, man, it's hot outside.
You know, it's funny because we've all been traveling, which we've mentioned that on past of the episodes, some of them that has already been published. But, you know, we've been in Iowa, and we've been State Fair, and then I was in Minnesota, and you've been all over, Jay. And right. But everywhere that I've been, the weather's been really tolerable. It's been really nice, so I like it.
So far this year, I've been from Maine to Idaho, and I've had good weather just about everywhere I went.
Yeah, you've definitely traveled a bigger circle than the rest of us.
Yeah, just an average year. David, you've had a little bit of work going on in your county that kindly benefits us all, something we started out in this year. Why don't you talk about a little bit about our corn plots that we had together on one of your producers?
Right, and, you know, somebody had to stay and work as everybody else was doing all the traveling, but...
You drew the short straw.
I drew the short straw this year, which I'm okay with. I don't really care nothing about much of that anyway, but...
I did help plant it.
Yes.
I was out there
Vicky
that day.
Vicky was out planting it. Jay has missed it all, but that's okay. He'll just have to make up next year.
There
but
you
anyway,
go.
We did have a really good plot. You know, the yields averaged anywhere from about 226 bushels to the acre to our top yielding was a decab variety that was 274.87. So we had a really, the top five, 274 was the top, and then 264 was second. Third was 256, fourth was 256, and fifth was 255. So, in all the, you know, to be honest with you, all the seed companies had one represented in that top five. So that was a pretty good spread, I thought, over all of those folks. So, you know, we really had a really good plot. Want to thank Fairview Farms for being our cooperator. They do an outstanding job, and to honest, I mean, Vicky and I helped plant it, and then, you know, we didn't have to do a whole lot in between. They do an outstanding job, very progressive, a bunch of producers there. Mr. Jonathan Ayer is the head man there, so we appreciate him helping us do that. We're going to get some information out. Vicky's going to work on us a spreadsheet that we're going to publish that on our Tri-County Ag website. It'll be available at the Extension offices in Hopkins and McLean and Webster County. So folks, if they're interested in that, and you know, I really think that that work is really important because those varieties are the varieties that work in our soil types in our area. And I think that kind of information is very important for folks to understand and to know. I really do.
I also want to thank the seed reps that we reached out to those because you can't really do a variety trial if you don't have the seed to put in it. And so I do want to send out a big thank you to those companies that we reached out with. I was able to talk with most of those when we was putting this together, and they were all very willing to put seed in it. They'd put as many as varieties as we wanted, or if it was one or two, they was okay with it, and because they find importance that too, because they like it when their seed can be in a variety trial that's not their own. Yeah. I think that just gives a little bit for the producers that
gives some validity
it
to
does,
that whole
you know,
situation.
It
That's
it
the
does.
Exact word I was thinking, yeah. Validity.
When it's not theirs, and so they've been really good to work with too. And,
yeah, we appreciate that.
And so
that,
we do appreciate that, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to work and be able to do that again next year and the years to come.
And we've got a soybean one coming out too, and when that comes out, we'll talk about it on our show. But when this program airs, we'll kind of be towards the end of corn harvest, I suspect. And but that's, you know, good information for next year. And folks that want that, be sure to get a hold of your county extension office in those three counties, and we'll be able to get you that information for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll make sure whenever we get that spreadsheet together, we'll have a comprehensive list of all the sporting companies that
sure.
helped with that, and because we do appreciate them. They're the life's blood of what we do. So.
Yep.
Well, it's just another. We talk about this a lot on. Our episodes, almost every one of them, really, it's those partnerships that we build, and that network of people that we work with from the producers, from the seed companies, from our extension specialists. Oftentimes, they're the ones helping us lay this out. I know when we started doing plots several years ago, before we ever put that first one out, we sat around the table with specialists and said, you know, we want to make sure that this is good information. We need you to help us. Give us some guidance on how to lay this out. And so it's just another example of the networking that goes on in the ag industry, and particularly that we work with in this area of
Kentucky. And those cooperators that help, and then not just in my county and in everybody's county,
right.
but, you know, those cooperators are very important. That on-farm testing to me is very important. I know Kirsten is here, and we talk a lot about, you know, the research that's done at the university, but anytime we can do research on a farm out in the county, that's really important work. So,
I think she'll probably touch on this, you know, here in just a little bit, but, you know, our specialist has always been encouraging of producers to do some on-farm trials. If there's something you're really wanting to test and you really want to know whether this is working or not,
I expect we'll get into that a little bit today,
will.
Too,
I
to be real
we
honest. Well, we'll talk a lot about
That's exactly
whether
right.
it works or it doesn't work. Or,
you or know, how to figure that
how
out.
How to figure that out. That's
you know,
a good
one,
point.
One of the buzzwords that's out there these days is citizen science. And that's exactly what we're doing when we're talking about on-farm trials. So.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
Good deal. So glad to have you with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been on the show again, so you're officially a retread now. That's what we call.
And that's a good thing, by the way.
That's good.
That's a good thing. When you've been called a retread,
that's
a good
right.
thing. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
For the folks who might not have caught that first show, just talk a little bit about yourself and the time you spent at the University of Kentucky and what you do in your work.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think we realized I've been at UK now for 6 years. Which time really flies. So, but for those who don't know me, I'm a native of Iowa. I grew up there. I did my bachelor's degree at Iowa State University. And then I moved to Georgia for my master's and worked there in plant pathology. And then I went to North Dakota State University for my PhD. So I really did these climate extremes and do a lot. And then I got hired at Purdue University, and I was there for 8 years before I came to UK. All in plant pathology, almost all of it in field crop diseases. And that's what I do here at UK. So a lot of my research focuses on optimizing our management for diseases of corn, sorghum, and forages. And really, I think if people have heard me talk, they've probably heard me talk about optimizing fungicide use in corn. Or if they haven't heard me talk about that, they're probably, because I'm delivering bad news, like, here's a disease that you have that you now need to manage. So those are the things that I think probably people would recognize me for.
I have a question. We had the opportunity to be in Iowa at our national meeting, and we got to on the day we had tours, which Jay and Vicky didn't get to go, we went to the football stadium, to the how do you say it? The Suck Up Center, which is a huge deal on the end of their stadium. It's like a big reception thing, and it's really nice. And just wanted to know if that was there when you were there.
Well, no. That beautiful addition, Iowa State's one of the only football stadiums with a grain bin attached to it,
yes.
right?
Yes.
That is pretty recent. Okay. And when I was there, and, you know, kind of still to this day, Iowa State's not known for their football.
No, but it's a really nice place on the end of their stadium.
So some of those additions have come in more recent years with a new coach, a newer coach, and some more winning seasons. Right. They've gotten some investment.
Well, it was pretty interesting, and I will have to say that our tour guide, and I cannot remember his name, but he was fantastic. I mean, he had facts, and he had worked us several years, but he had facts. The whole time we drove to our stops, he would stand up and he would talk and just tell you little facts about, we were in the, our tour was in the Hog Belt, is what he called it, and you could not stop anywhere in that little area without seeing hog houses, cattle feeding facilities, or grain facilities. Nowhere.
Was that kind of north of Des Moines? Yeah. Is that the area y'all were in?
Yeah. And so that was very interesting. And I can't not remember the guy's name, but he did a fantastic job. I mean, he was just telling us stuff. Our first stop was an hour from Des Moines, and he talked the entire time. And it was interesting stuff. It wasn't, just to hear yourself talk. It was really interesting. So I enjoyed my trip to Iowa, and then we got to go back there to the football stadium to have supper. So it was pretty interesting, pretty neat.
I think for us in agriculture, the drive, the drive, David and I, we drove up together, and then Jay and I rode with Jay back to, because we had to get back to the state fair, so I got to see a couple of different routes. And but it's a beautiful agricultural state, and anybody in agriculture, if you haven't been to Iowa and you get the opportunity or to go up that way, it really is a beautiful state. It's just an agricultural state. And
he told us like something like 90% of the land in Iowa is agriculture. It's 90 or 90 plus. Wow. I forget what it was. It was amazing, that fact. I thought that was very interesting.
But, it's a cool state. I mean, it's a neat state, and I wish that I had gotten to stay a little bit longer. It's just, as one of my producers said one time, work really messes up a day. And so Jay and I had to get back to work at State Fair, so it kind of that kind of messed up our time in Iowa.
Yeah, and if you don't like looking at corn and soybeans, don't go to Iowa.
Well, that's true. Because,
I mean, that is, between that and the hog houses, is interesting.
So I have to ask, did your tour guide tell you what Iowans, call the smell that you get from all the hog houses?
No, he did not.
So we call that the smell of money.
It smells like money. Yeah, I understand
that.
Money.
That's what I grew up hearing.
And even we actually toured some cattle feeding facilities. That's what the tour was about. And I'll be honest with you, I couldn't tell, of course the wind was blowing pretty good that day too, but I thought that was really interesting that you really couldn't smell hardly anything.
Yeah.
And we were in some deep pit cattle feeding facilities. And just walking through there, and I mean, you really, really did not smell hardly anything, to be honest, other than normal,
Right.
But it was a really good trip and really good tour that we went on that day. So,
well, the other thing that when I was in Iowa, and then we'll quit talking about Iowa, but you all are really excited about your state fair.
Yes,
because we were there during the state fair, and
did y'all get to go?
Didn't get to go. But everywhere we went, it didn't matter if you were eating out, if you were just run into somebody on the sidewalk and they find out you're not from here. Have you been to the state fair? Have you been to the state fair? Listen. Are you going to the state fair? I mean, it was all over the news.
Listen. I was there. We went. That was one of our deals. And so we went to the state fair. I was there for 4.5 hours, and I never found a place to sit down.
Yeah.
I've never seen so many people in my life. You couldn't stir them with a stick. I mean, there was people everywhere. It's crazy.
Minnesota,
100,000 people, I think, is what they said it was there.
Minnesota people are the same way about their state fair, because when I was in Minnesota, the state fair was going on, and we actually went to the state fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was blown away just by the state fair grounds. Yeah. It's like its own little city. Yep. And I mean, that's it was huge. I mean, you could only see just a small
part. Like they used to have in Opryland.
That's exactly the way Minnesota was. And that's when we were there, everybody wanted to know if we was going to the state fair there in Minnesota. I was
best cheese curds I've ever had in my life. The Iowa State Fair.
Don't tell Wisconsin.
No, I won't. But I mean, I've never been to Wisconsin State Fair, but I'm just saying the best cheese curds I've ever had have been at.
Now, were these fried cheese curds or were they just cheese curds?
They were good cheese curds, so they were fried.
Well, but I like them both ways. I eat them both ways.
Well, Minnesota was big on that, too. So it was just.
But I do have to say, Minnesota's State Fair is not listed as one of the 1,000 things you need to do before you die. And Iowa State Fair is in that.
And I've done it.
Maybe one day I'll get to. I mean, I came really close.
I wouldn't go back for nothing in the world.
Well, because
you've done it once.
I see it.
David loves to be in big crowds. And that's one of his favorite things. That's one of his favorite things to do. So I texted him that night and I said, so how is the state fair? You know, we've heard a lot about it. He said, well, I'm here with I forget how he said, I'm here with the other 10 or 15,000 people, or I forget the number that you, you know,
the
said.
The entire state of Iowa.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But I will give them credit. It was all agriculture-based.
Right.
I mean, just about everything was. Mm-hmm. So I give them that. Yeah, I give kudos to them for doing that. They do a fantastic job. Everything is really agriculture focused, and you know, it's just I got to see some stuff that got to see some tractors, some old tractors that I've never seen in my life, you know, and I thought that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
But it was a good time, but I was ready to be done. You know, when you don't get to sit down for 4.5 hours and
be around the 100,000 people that was there.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I was ready to leave, but and then the bad part was when we got on the bus to come back, I had to stand up. It's so crowded. You know, they had these city buses that were taking us to and from. Well, I didn't know that they were taking everybody else too. You know, they have places that they park out like at the state capitol and places like that, that you can get on a bus and ride into the, so we were, it wasn't just us ag agents, it was everybody. So yeah, it was pretty crowded. It was interesting. I had a good time.
But you've checked it off your list.
Yeah, I've checked that off. So we can move on from that.
We need to add it to ours.
We got to add it to ours.
Y'all can have it.
I guess we can get to the topic at hand now.
Sure. Well, but it is good discussing all that stuff. We don't chase too many squirrels, but that to me, if we're talking about Iowa, if we're talking about corn diseases, talking about Iowa is relevant because that's. That's where all the corn is for the most part.
And I remember being a native.
I remember a coworker of ours. He's long since retired now, but his father lived in Iowa. That particular county, and I don't remember the county, but I remember in total production, that particular county produced more bushels of corn annually than the Purchase area of Kentucky. It's relevant.
It is very relevant.
So. We came to talk about tar spot and any other or all other included diseases. So talk about a little bit about 2023 and what you've seen.
And I mean, it's a good segue because tar spot's a really big deal in Iowa. And so when we started seeing it in Kentucky, you know, we really sat up and took notice because, as everyone knows, you know, when you're hearing these states, these major corn-producing states, to the north of us are losing 60 bushel an acre from this disease, it's really concerning.
Right.
And tar spot for us has so far, fingers crossed, has not been yield limiting. It has not been as damaging and it has not been as widespread as it has been in states like Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and further north. We confirmed it for the first time in Kentucky in 2021. We had a couple counties where we found it. Another county in 2022, and now in 2023, we have a few counties where it's popping up, and we'll probably have a few more before all the corn's out. But the good news is that in none of these years where we've confirmed it, we've not confirmed it before September. So it has not showed up, it has not got established or severe enough to cause yield loss or really have much of an impact on our corn crop. And we think there's a few reasons for that, but I always just like to say that the news about tar spot in Kentucky is pretty good news as far as diseases go. So that's, I think, been really important for our farmers, is that it has not been the magnitude and severity that we've seen in those states to the north. So.
You mentioned you have some ideas. Wow. What are some of those ideas?
Well, there's a few reasons that we think Kentucky might be an area where tar spot might have marginal impact. And the first is sort of the climate of Kentucky. Tar spot is caused by a fungus, and it's a fungus that likes it cooler. So the optimal conditions for its infection and growth are going to be from like 66 to 72 degrees. And if you think about corn tasseling in Kentucky, I mean, I've not been in a lot of cornfields around tasseling.
In the 90s.
Yeah, where it's that nice, cool, mild temperatures like we have right now. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the reasons we think, okay, well, maybe that's why we see it show up in September every year is because those are the conditions that favor. We do know, we've done research at UK, we do know that fungus is out there throughout the year. Like, we monitor with these little spore traps. We have spore traps, we're out there, and then we send those samples off, and we can detect the fungus that causes tar spot. But if we don't have those environmental conditions that favor infection, we won't see the disease. And so that's one of the things I think we're kind of learning about right now, is the fungus is there, but the environment's not right until later in the season, so far.
And you can't talk about plant pathology without talking about the disease triangle.
Vicky, you know it.
Yes.
That's our core tenet, right?
Oh, my gosh.
If I had like a gold star, I would give it to
you. Oh, my gosh. I can't take it.
Well, I try to tell them all the time, but they just, you know.
But I also think there's one other thing that Kentucky farmers do that really mitigates the impact of tar spot. And a lot of our farmers are spraying fungicides around tasseling for southern rust management, right? Maybe some other foliar diseases too. But southern rust is a very important disease to us in Kentucky. It's also very hard to predict when it's going to hit our state, because it does not survive our winters. The fungus blows north each year on, you know, wind currents and storms. And so most farmers are going to budget, or at least plan for, an application of fungicide to protect against southern rust. And that fungicide application is also going to protect against tar spot. And so I always tell, you know, in Kentucky, we're used to managing corn diseases that are important. And so by managing what is already a threat here, we're also managing tar spot. And so that might also be a reason that we're not seeing it pop up, is because a lot of the corn is already getting managed for other diseases.
I know when we were in Iowa, the temperatures were fantastic. I mean, 70s, I mean, it was nice. Compared to being down here when it was almost 100 or whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, I was out in our cornfield. It was in August. So, and we take this little thing called a Kestrel with us, and it just monitors the temperature. Cause like, if we're spraying, we want to know what the wind speed is and all those things.
Handheld weather stuff. I've got one.
Yep. We have one of those. And it was telling us that in the corn, the heat index was 133 this one day. Yeah. And I remember telling my technician, I was like, it feels really hot out here. And he holds that up and he's like, well, yeah, because it is really hot.
It is. It is really hot.
But those are not conditions that favor anything, not me, not anybody.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I think that really does slow it down, you know. Now, a lot of people might have heard, you know, they do have tar spot in Georgia. And so it's been very similar to what we've seen in Kentucky. It shows up later in the season. It's usually in some of their second crop corn or their very late planted corn. But they're also managing for southern rust. And so that does sort of knock it back to, it's not really yield limiting in their area either. And so we're sort of in that cusp where we're still trying to figure things out. Are we going to be more like Georgia, where it shows up late in the season, not really a big impact? But there might be a year where we have a very cool sort of June or July, and we might see some come in earlier. But again, it's a disease, and we know how to manage diseases, and this particular disease is managed by a lot of the things we already do. So,
you know, we had talked off there a little bit about, you know, some of this year being a weird year, and the fact that we probably got, we think, Jay and I think there's about three plantings of corn out there. And some corn is still green right now. But as you say, you know, if you're putting a fungicide on, you're going to kind of, that's going to help protect against tar spot. But I think if it went unchecked, that we could possibly see a lot of that show up in this later planted corn. This is not a normal year from a corn plant standpoint, but in a year like this, I think you might would see some. I mean, I don't know. You might, you tell us, what do you think?
Yeah. So I think if we were scouting right now, the areas we would want to scout would be the late planted corn, because that's where I think you would see it, where there'd be some green tissue left to infect. And in fields that didn't have a fungicide application, I think those would be the ones that you'd be more likely to see this disease if you were scouting.
Yep.
But I always also say that, you know, towards the end of the season, you know, once you get sort of past that R4, you know, dough into early dent, you'll see diseases flare up at the end as corn starts to go down. And those diseases aren't necessarily going to have a big impact on yield. So they might look bad. You might see gray leaf spot or even southern rust come and eat up a canopy at the very end, but it's too late in the season to see a big reduction in yield. And there's not going to be enough reduction in yield that would justify going out and spraying. Yeah. And one thing that we don't always talk about with our fungicide applications, and we see this when we harvest, is that some of our fungicide applications, especially the later you go, you do keep that grain wetter longer. Mm-hmm. And so those, while it might be alarming to see disease kind of flare up at the end of the season, there is sort of a trade-off between, you know, how dry do you want your corn? Do you want to be able to get out there and get it? Or are you going to have to wait a little bit longer because it's 2 points wetter?
I've heard farmers say for a long time, you know, a lot of, and this was with gray leaf spot, a lot of times when it would come in, you could come in late, like you were talking about. And I always had farmers, a lot of times, would refer to that, well, it's just a drying aid at this point.
Exactly, yeah. It'll dry down faster.
And that's the kind of the way that they referred to that when it would come in at that time. And it does. I mean, you know, you see that every year.
Yeah, and it and
for most years
in our area, and I say our area, not the area Jay and I live in, but in this kind of the Davis, McLean, you know, Webster, Hopkins County area. To me, there's not near as much farms on farm storage. Folks don't have as many dryers as they do maybe down in Christian County and Todd County and down through there. So, you know, those aids that we have to dry that corn down, it makes a difference if you put a fungicide on or not, because it's going to stay wetter longer. You know, in our plot, I know we cut, you know, anywhere from 21% to 26 or 7% moisture, you know, here at the kind of the middle of September. So, you know, if you think about that staying wet until, you know, 1st of October, I mean, that's a long time, and that kind of hinders you from getting everything done that you want to get done and being able to to either take a dock or having to dry that corn or putting some air on it or something. I mean, it costs. I mean, everything costs something. So you trade off all of these things for a cost. So, you know, those are some things to consider when we're talking about putting on a fungicide.
And when we first started seeing more fungicide applications back several years ago now, but when we first started seeing that, when that was just starting, now it's common, but when it was first started, that was one of the things that producers kind of got frustrated with until they kind of got used to that being, and kind of planning for that is just being able to get in there and get it harvested, and soybeans too. I mean, particularly. So
I know we did some aerial plots with Dr. Paul Vincelli back way many years ago when I was in Trigg County. Down there with Seven Springs, and you know, when I got tickled. He had to go out there, and he wanted to take some samples and do some different things. And man, it was hot. I mean, it was hot. But he persevered and got through it. But I think it was some really good data for us, because that's the first time we'd ever done any of that kind of thing, and that was way back probably, I don't know, 06, 07, in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. So many, many years ago was when this started.
Yeah, that's right. In areas that tar spot is something that they have problems with most years, or a lot of years, like you had mentioned, has there been any problems with any kind of fungicide resistance with these diseases? Because we know overuse of fungicides is one of the reasons that we have resistance or pesticides in general. I won't just say fungicides, but are they? Is that something that some of these states is? I know it's on the radar. I'm certain, but are they? Is any of that showing up right now?
So not yet. There are people that are doing the research to look at it to try to monitor fungicide sensitivity over time, and it's important that you know. When we see these new diseases, we need to start looking pretty much right away and monitoring that so we can mm-hmm. see when things start to shift. So it's one of those things where we hope that we're going to have a long life with these products, the active ingredients that we have available, but we have to do that work. And, you know, at UK, we're doing some of that work. We're looking at the fungus that causes northern corn leaf blight. Mm-hmm. That's not a new disease, but now what we've noticed is that if you look at your fungicides, there's very few that just have one active ingredient or one mm-hmm. fungicide class that we're using. We're using two or three.
Right.
So we need to start monitoring these, and that's what we've started at UK to try to keep track of that. So if we start to see shifts, we can recommend, you know, using different products or, you know, maybe spraying more judiciously if needed.
Right.
So those are some things that we are keeping track of on a broad range of our corn diseases, not just tar spot.
Right. Well, as we mentioned earlier, you know, the disease triangle, again, I'll throw that out there again. But anyway, I know back in the summer at our UK field day, the corn, soybeans, and tobacco field day, you know, I was a group leader for your stop there, and you kept saying, you know, I don't need that much time. There's no disease here. And but just talk about that, the 2023 season and the lack of diseases that were out there this year and kind of why that was.
Yeah. I mean, that was a really disappointing day for me because I have a lot to talk about, right?
Farmers didn't mind.
I know. It was great news for everybody else, but it was okay because it was really hot that day.
It was really hot.
It was so hot.
Yes.
But yeah, so it really, diseases got off to a very slow start this year, and that's okay for corn. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's just, again, our weather. We didn't have very conducive disease for weather because across most of Western Kentucky, June, the end of May and June were very dry. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to forget that now because a lot of places have had ample or even maybe too much moisture. Mm-hmm. But I was very worried for corn in June. Just everything was pineappling and mm-hmm. it was very close to being a very bad year. And those dry conditions are not very favorable for a lot of our fungal diseases in particular. So what that did was that dry period just slowed everything down. So all of our disease development was about a month later than we would normally see it. Mm-hmm. And even southern rust, you know, we didn't have any tropical storms mm-mm. this year. Mm-mm. Isn't that weird? Like mm-hmm. we didn't have anything come up from the Gulf. And so we didn't have southern rust arrive until August. Since yeah. I've been at Kentucky, that's never happened. It's yeah. never come mm-hmm. up that late.
Right.
So everything was about a month behind. And then it really started to rear up once we got some moisture. But that month, it just delayed everything. And then corn was, you know, well into grain fill. And then diseases weren't going to have as big of an impact on yield. And so that was, I think, really, of what could have been a bad year, that was a silver lining. Mm-hmm.
That is something that was different about this year is the direction that most of our rains came from. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were northerly rains right. or northwesterly rains, which is very, very different for our part of the country.
Yeah, and that influences the diseases that we see, right?
Right.
So, mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, we talked to, we had a guest on here several weeks back. Mr. Daniel Leonard, he is a ag agent in the panhandle of Florida, and he was talking about, you know, the hurricanes that came through, and, you mm-hmm. know, we were explaining to him that had not been for those hurricanes coming up through Kentucky, we would have lost several crops
yeah.
throughout the years. Yeah,
yeah mm-hmm. and he kind of was taken aback a little bit at that and felt like that was something he really didn't know. Yeah. And
specifically the double crop wheat that's grown in the southern part of Kentucky and across that Pennyroyal region, we almost depend on those tropical storms coming up through the Mississippi Valley and bringing that rain to us. I know it carries diseases from different times too, but yeah. we almost depend on that rain some years.
And depending on when they come through is what diseases they bring and to how much trouble that causes us with some other stuff. But
you know, you back up even from the tropical storms. The fact that we had no fronts coming from the south, we had very little humidity through parts of our summer.
That's right.
And that was a big, big direct effect from the lack of rains coming from that direction.
Yep. You know, the rains that we did get, a lot of them were pretty severe just because, well, I'll go back to what my granddad says, and you know, anytime you get a rain from the north, it's never good because it's pretty rough, you know. And I think that held true throughout time, regardless of whether it was how much rain we had or whatever. A few months ago now, that when this broke in Ayers, we had 7 inches in about 6 hours, I had never seen water that high in places.
Yeah.
Right there at my house. But, you know, anyway, and that rain came from
and the
that
time
direction.
That it came, that was in August, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
You don't,
yep.
usually,
we
you
don't get those.
You don't
That's
see
right.
big rains yeah. in August. I mean, you're just hoping to get a little rain in August if you can get it, usually in our area. And,
That's right.
And to have that much. And I think that was with the crazy weather pattern, it was the number of those type of rains. And they weren't in the same places every time. But, you know, I know
but
here.
But they were close.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, I think at some point, all of us had one of those 7-8 inch rains, and we don't live in the same place. But throughout this growing season, we've all had one at some point.
Directly at my house, I missed most of the ones that either one of y'all got. But every storm that come through, I got 3/4 of an inch.
Yeah.
It seemed like. I mean, I was just catching the corner of every storm until the week of Labor Day while I was gone, and we got 5 inches at the house.
Yeah.
So what's so odd about that with a lot of those storms, like we said, coming from the north or northwest, our neighbor just to the west of us, Missouri, the northern part of that state was in a historical drought
for
throughout the bulk of the growing season. So the fact that we got those rains and they came very near there, but they weren't getting any of them. Just odd.
Does the weather patterns that we're having now, and I'm not going to get off on climate change and all that carrying on, but the rains that the storms that blow through, they don't seem to, the disease pressures that come in don't seem to be as bad as if we get one from the south. Is that right? Is that wrong? I mean, it just seems that way.
Well, I would sort of describe it, especially this summer, as when diseases, they like consistent things, right? So they want that 3/4 of an inch, you know, every week. They want humidity consistently. 6 inches at a time, you know, and then it doesn't rain for 2 more weeks is not going to be really conducive. Those aren't the optimum conditions. And so I think that was part of it, is that you get the rain all at once, and then you get nothing, and then 2 weeks later you're going to get another huge dump of rain.
I got you.
But if we were getting, you know, 3/4 of an inch every week, or even 1/4 of an inch, you know, every few days, you know, just a little drizzle here and there, things that keep leaves moist and high humidity and just constant moisture in that canopy, that's what really drives a lot of our fungal diseases.
I've got an idea, and you just feel free to shoot this down or to tell me if there's any thought to it at all. But when I think of just what David said, diseases coming from the south versus the north, one of those things in that disease triangle that they have to have is a host.
Gold star.
And from our south, the growing season for our particular crops is so much longer. It started earlier in the year. So there is that host for those diseases to develop on, which is different from the ones that would come from the north. Mm-hmm. It's just a shorter season all the way along. So I've kind of thought that, like, when we had those patterns that come from the south, one of the reasons we got that heavier amount of diseases is because there was more hosts out there during that time for them to develop on. Is that...
Yeah, I think there's something to that, right? So if Southern rust can get established in, you know, say Northern Mississippi and Arkansas, then there's more of that fungus that can get established mm-hmm. and move up into our area. One thing I will say, though, is that a lot of our diseases, things like gray leaf spot, now tar spot, northern, all those other, they're already here. Mm-hmm. They survive in our residue. They survive mm-hmm. in some alternative hosts and things like that. It's just, they just need the environment. So right. we know they're here. It's really southern rust is the one that kind of, you know, moves in on the whims of those storms. One thing, though, I've had someone ask me before, you know, why we haven't seen southern rust kind of blow up to those, you know, 2016 levels in a long time. And before that, it was even multiple years since there'd been a bad southern rust year. And one of the things that helps is that a lot of our farmer friends down in the states of the south are also spraying fungicides, right? Mm-hmm. So if you yeah. get a nice broad stretch of treated corn, there's less corn for that fungus to infect and build up and move north. And so yeah, it is sense. Sort of yeah. regional management of mm-hmm. a disease.
Right.
That makes lots of sense.
That
makes
is. Neighbors sense. Helping neighbors.
I think back,
I mean, really.
Well, I think back to the days, what's kind of caused that thought is when we raised a lot of the tobacco in the state.
Yep.
And we had blue mold issues. And a lot of those blue mold issues came from other states that had blue mold issues. Yes. And a lot of those came from Cuban tobacco. Yes, we yeah. kindly knew that that was a pattern that we yeah. followed. So
yeah. Really quick, you know, when you were talking about a lot of these diseases that are staying on maybe on some residue or something, residue management. A lot of corn here in our little small area here does not get turned into wheat, and then doesn't get disced down, or doesn't, you know, whatever. You know, is there something that people can do, you know, to help that if they do have disease pressures to get, you know, from a residue standpoint?
Yeah, so anything we can do to minimize residue, encourage residue breakdown helps, but I know that's a hard sell. And so the easiest thing that farmers can do is choose hybrids that are resistant to these foliar diseases, and that will help reduce mm-hmm. the amount of disease, because you're putting something out in that field that's less susceptible to disease. And we do have great hybrid resistance available for a lot of diseases like gray leaf spot, even southern rust, tar spot. That's not going to be available in our maturities yet, mm-hmm. but you know, a lot of the main players that we see in Kentucky, we can plant things that have better resistance in those fields.
And I'm assuming crop rotation helps with that too.
Crop rotation also helps.
And you know, the positive here is farmers do a really good job of rotating, but it is, mm-hmm. it's going to be a corn soybean rotation without right. that third crop
right.
in there,
right?
Which does make a difference when you can put that third crop in there to rotate. That really helps.
Yeah, break up a lot of that
yes.
disease right. triangle.
Right.
Gold yes. Star.
Gold Star. Yes. Hey,
we all got one.
We have done well today.
we can
all learn.
Yeah, I understand.
They give me a hard time about livestock, so getting them back a little bit today.
we've all got our niche area that we know a little bit about. So, you know, moving along, that's one of the things we like to do is wrap our show up every year with a timely tip. And we kindly felt like, since diseases were our topic of the day, right now when this show airs, most producers are going to be just winding up their corn harvest or getting very, very close to it. So we thought that's a good time to start next year's disease management plan now. You can go a long way towards getting ready for next year by starting with evaluating this year's disease management plan, see where your successes were, maybe see some of those areas where you could have done a little bit better job, or maybe something didn't work like you wanted it to. Evaluate those and use those to make next year's decisions. So,
yeah, and make those decisions now. And
absolutely.
And you know, most people are putting their seed orders in. By the time this airs, I would say most producers will have already locked in that. But
those start earlier and yeah. earlier every year. And if you haven't done it by the time you've got your combines rolling, that's the time to be evaluating that. For a lot of reasons, disease management's just yes. one of them.
And one of the things before we close out today is Dr. Wise mentioned before we started recording today that if fungicide applications are in the plan for next year, if that's something in your operation that you feel like that you're going to do, and going in and going ahead and getting that locked in, so you know you're going to get the product that you want and maybe able to capture a little bit of a discount too that you're not going to be able to get maybe later on in the season or even after the first of the year. So
I think after what we went through with 2021, when price and availability were both an issue, that a lot of folks have really stepped up and getting on top of that in the last year.
I agree.
So yeah. Sounds great. Well, we want to say thanks, Kirsten, for being on our show with us. We want to thank you for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and will make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.